Order. We'll keep it. Please call the roll.
Chair Andrade.
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Here.
Ranking Member Silvers.
Here.
Representative Antone is excused. Representative Burfield.
Here.
Brackett. Daly is excused. Esposito.
Here.
G. Lombardo.
Here.
Harris.
Here.
LaMarca.
Here.
Lopez. Placencia.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Yeager.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Just as a reminder, please make sure all electronic devices are turned off or on vibrate. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back. It's good to see everybody. I'm looking forward to another successful year and working with you all again. A few weeks ago, agencies were required to submit their budget requests for the next fiscal year, so today we'll hear four of those requests. The Department of Commerce, the Department of Military Affairs, the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, and the Division of Emergency Management. We'll bring our final two agencies up when we return for committee next month. I would like to make a few notes as we begin these presentations today. On a statewide basis, agencies are asking for over $5.8 billion of additional general revenue spending and $22.8 billion of additional trust fund spending over the base budget. Within our subcommittee, the six agencies under our jurisdiction are requesting an additional $1.2 billion from the general revenue, as well as $15.8 billion from trust funds. That might be somewhat misleading, however, considering the average, on average, 85% of our annual budget is non-recurring. To provide some additional context, this equates to a 10% increase in recurring spending and a 96% increase in recurring general revenue. As we listen to the presentations, I want to remind you about the long-range financial outlook that was issued earlier this fall by the Legislative Budget Commission. That outlook focused primarily on the General Revenue Fund, and it showed that our state budget is in good shape with positive ending balances projected for the next 3 years. Despite that good news, the outlook has also revealed that projected expenditures are beginning to outpace revenues, particularly for recurring spending. Members, this means that we need to be cautious as we develop next year's budget, and we need to be mindful of the out-year impacts of our spending decisions. With this in mind, I will recognize the Department of Commerce to give the first presentation because their PowerPoint's already pulled up.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of and committee members. My name is Tisha Womack, and it's my honor to serve as the Chief Financial Officer of the Florida Department of Commerce, also known as Florida Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you with an overview of Florida Commerce's legislative budget request. I am joined today by representatives from our public-private partners, CareerSource Florida, Florida Housing Finance Corporation, Visit Florida, Space Florida, and Florida Sports Foundation. Last May, Governor DeSantis signed House Bill 5 into law, renaming the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity as the Florida Department of Commerce, with the goal of gaining efficiencies, cutting red tape, and reducing the size and footprint of government for both job seekers and job creators in all industries. Integrating Florida's economic development and international trade arms into a one-stop shop for job seekers and job creators has given us the opportunity to streamline our efforts and align our goals to be more effective and meet the needs of Floridians from all walks of life. Florida's low unemployment rate and growing labor force are a result of strategic investments in Florida's workforce, combined with Governor DeSantis' Freedom First policies that attract businesses to our state in competitive industries, creating meaningful career opportunities and positively impacting the lives of Floridians. We are focused on creating sustainable, innovative, and dynamic business growth to ensure future generations can reap the benefits for years to come. Florida Commerce has 1,530 full-time employees that support our mission. Our base budget for fiscal year 24-25 includes $44 million in general revenue funds and $872 million in trust funds. For the upcoming fiscal year, Florida Commerce requests $1.7 billion in new issues with an overall budget of $2.6 billion. Now I'm going to highlight some of the programs that the department implements to build strong and resilient communities, foster economic growth, and invest in job seekers. Florida Commerce requests $584 million for the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Program. These funds will be used to address immediate needs in fiscal year 24-25 related to Hurricanes Irma, Michael, Sally, and Ian, as well as mitigation to address housing, infrastructure, economic development, and mitigation needs that remain after other assistance has been exhausted. This request reflects our commitment to expediting long-term recovery programs in Florida to ensure affected counties, cities, and citizens are supported and can fully recover from recent disasters. Florida Commerce requests $100 million for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, also known as BEAD. Expanding existing broadband service areas to cover rural and isolated communities is essential to attracting businesses and allowing Floridians to participate in and help drive a thriving economy, enhance their education and workforce skills, and achieve better living through telemedicine. Florida Commerce requests $20 million to maintain the current level of funding for the Rural Infrastructure Fund, also known as RIF. Our RIF program supports job creation, capital investment, and the strengthening and diversification of rural economies. Also, we are requesting positions to assist in the operations and implementation of the program. Florida Commerce requests $100 million for the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, which assists income-qualified families with home heating and cooling costs. We are requesting $3 million for the Community Services Block Grant Program to assist low- to moderate-income individuals within the 24 counties impacted by Hurricane Ian to address unmet needs specifically for housing and to achieve economic self-sufficiency. Highlighted on this slide are recent examples of how these funds are used to build strong and resilient communities around the state. In April, Governor DeSantis announced over $994,000 to Jackson County through the RIF program. In the same month, Governor DeSantis awarded over $247 million through the Broadband Infrastructure Program, adding to the $226 million awarded previously through the Broadband Opportunity Program. Through the Hurricane Michael CDBG-DR Housing Construction Program, we successfully returned 977 families to their homes in 20 months. Florida Commerce hosted Florida's first broadband summit in September to promote broadband internet expansion. Additionally, we submitted Florida's action plan for Hurricane Ian recovery to HUD after holding 40 in-person meetings with citizens and stakeholders. Moving on, Florida requests $175 million for the State Small Business Credit Initiative to continue supporting Florida's small and very small businesses. Through the SSBCI program, Florida is expanding access to capital, promoting economic resiliency, creating new jobs, and increasing economic opportunities. Florida Commerce requests $100 million for the Governor's Job Growth Grant Fund. The program funds workforce training projects that prepare Floridians to be more competitive in the job market and infrastructure enhancements that maximize economic output by attracting new or expanding businesses. Florida Commerce requests $1.8 million for the implementation of E-Verify. The funds will be used for staffing and to perform its duties and responsibilities to combat illegal immigration and safeguard Florida's families and communities. We are requesting $25 million to fund the state's economic development tools to uphold the state's ongoing commitments to businesses participating in economic development programs. To support Florida's military communities and protect military installations, we are requesting $3 million to fund the Defense Support Task Force, $7 million to continue funding the Defense Infrastructure Grant Program, and $2.2 million to fund the Military Base Protection Program. Florida Commerce requests $3.5 million for the Technical Assistance Initiative for small manufacturers, which will be used through Florida Makes to provide technical assistance for Florida's small manufacturers to adapt to new technologies and needs and to provide access capital. $25 million is for the Local Government Revolving Emergency Bridge Loan Program that provides capital to local governments recovering from a federally declared disaster. Next slide. Okay. Florida Commerce recognizes the importance of fostering economic and workforce growth. Here are some recent examples. We celebrated the opening of Big Bend Technical College's virtual reality health science lab in August, which was made possible by a $2 million job growth grant fund award. In September, we established the Office of Military and Defense to better support our military families and protect military installations. Just last week, we reached over $101 million in loans and investments through the state small Business Credit Initiative, leveraging nearly $340 million in private funding. Part of workforce development is investing in Florida's job seekers. Florida Commerce requests $1.5 million to purchase a mobile one-stop vehicle to provide services to job seekers and for disaster response activities. $20 million is requested for law enforcement recruitment bonus program to recruit and hire new law enforcement officers from within the state and across the country, and $1.3 million to support this program. We are requesting $500,000 for the one-stop service migration to maintain the current system, which is nearing the end of its life while a new system is procured. Florida Commerce requests $1.2 million for economic intelligence and research to support the agency's economic development activities in alignment with the requirement of House Bill 5. Florida Commerce requests $11.4 million for reemployment assistance operations and maintenance, which includes maintaining the system's performance, reliability, customer-oriented improvements, and services to support the system. $14 million is requested for reemployment assistance claimant services enhancements for licensing costs and services to enhance our fraud detection system. $3.5 million is requested for CareerSource Florida to engage in external affairs efforts and stakeholder outreach required to fully and successfully implement the REACH Act. $200,000 is requested for a master credentials database, which includes the development of a new data management solution that would act as a shared space among Commerce, DOE, REACH, and CareerSource Florida staff for managing and reviewing applications for the master credentials list. $5 million is for the SNAP program to expand partnerships with eligible organizations that will provide training services. As we all know, quick action is crucial in the aftermath of a disaster. In response to Hurricane Idalia's impact, Governor DeSantis directed Florida Commerce and CareerSource Florida to deploy in-person resources to these disaster locations. We also provided resources to the city of Perry after the Georgia Pacific mill closure. In line with First Lady Casey DeSantis's Hope Florida expansion, Florida Commerce is collaborating with the Department of Children and Families and CareerSource Florida to link Floridians with unique abilities to employment opportunities. Florida Commerce is pleased to announce that over 3,100 law enforcement officers have received bonuses through our Law Enforcement Recruitment Bonus Payment Program in the past 2 years. In improving security and efficient services, Florida Commerce requests $718,000 for the Capital Improvement Plan to repair Commerce-owned buildings. $3.8 million for cybersecurity for contracted services to support staffing applications and licensing costs. Florida Commerce requests $6.6 million for cloud infrastructure to maintain and enhance performance and reliability from migrating the data center to the cloud. $1 million for agency-wide monitoring of federal awards and programs. Florida Commerce requests $1.2 million for contracted services and IT for software licensing agreements and support required to maintain functionality and increase response time. $1 million is requested for contracted services to maintain safe operations of the Florida Commerce buildings across the state, such as janitorial and security services. $646,000 is requested to support Florida Commerce's transition to the Florida Planning, Accounting, and Ledger Management System, called PALM. And $1.3 million is requested to support the Florida Department of Revenue in the collection of reemployment assistance tax. In addition to Florida Commerce's legislative budget requests, the agency administers the budgets on behalf of our partner organizations, including the Florida Housing Finance Corporation, Visit Florida, Space Florida, and the Florida Sports Foundation. For the upcoming fiscal year, the Florida Housing Finance Corporation requests over $208 million for the State Housing Initiatives Partnership, $89 million for the Affordable Housing Program, and $100 million for the Hometown Heroes Program. Visit Florida requests $70 million to continue to market our state as the best worldwide tourist destination. Space Florida requests $5 million to support its operations and $6 million for its financing fund to continue its mission to grow Florida's space industry capability. And $5 million is requested for the Florida Sports Foundation. As a reminder, our partners are in the committee room if you should have any questions. Thank you all so much for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions? Representative Esposito.
Thank you. So you asked for five FTEs for an Office of Economic Intelligence and Research. Can you talk about what research they would be doing and how it differs from EDR?
You recognize.
Thank you. Florida Commerce is the state agency responsible for producing and publishing labor market statistics, data, implementing federal labor market information programs, and providing this information to the state's workforce stakeholders. current staff perform these functions. We have experienced an increasing demand for economic research and business development data from local governments, the legislature, and other state agencies, including the REACH Office and the Office of Economic and Demographic Research. These new positions will enhance the department's ability to collect, analyze, and report data to help policymakers and job creators make well-informed investments in Florida's workforce and economy.
Representative Burfield.
Thank you. It looks like you're requesting, again, additional budget authority for the federal assistant programs. And in the past, I believe there's been challenges in getting that to the local community or agencies. Have you been able to rectify that issue?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your question, Representative. We have recently gone through a process of realigning all contracts and local awards with our state budget authority.
Will you actually have any of the current funds that will be reverted?
You're recognized.
Associated in this area?
Thank you. No funds will be reverted.
Representative Lopez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Tisha. Thank you so very much for that presentation. I did have one quick question on the Florida Housing Finance Corporation. I know that we have appropriated through the Live Local Act last year certain amounts of funding for some of these particular programs. And so my question is, one, how have we done in distributing those funds from last year? Where are we? What's a good status? And if you don't have that information, maybe you can provide it to us. But is this in addition to these funds? Is this for additional, abilities to create more affordable housing?
You're recognized.
Good afternoon. I'm Angie Sellers, Chief Financial Officer of Florida Housing. The request for the $100 million for Hometown Heroes is in addition to the funding that we received last year. We had that money reserved in less than 60 days. And so we're looking to go ahead and redo that. The other programs, we received some viability funding that has already been committed. Our traditional sale funding that we received in the budget last year is in the process of being committed. We have received in the Live Local Tax Credit Contribution Program, that's $100 million a year. Now that's not an appropriation, but that's we have requests for $52 million for this year already, and that just opened October 1st. And we are in the process of preparing for the workshop. We're workshopping and doing our request for applications for the other $150 million. That's the general revenue redirect.
Mr. Chairman, so if you could provide me when you think we will have expended or allocated all those funds
Absolutely.
Out to them, and the number of units of affordable housing that we were able to provide with the additional funding would
Absolutely.
Be helpful.
Absolutely, we can get you that information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Sellers, just please make sure to fill out a speaker form before you leave. Any additional questions? I did have just one follow-up on the federal spending authority for some of your federal programs. Is it last year was the issue an issue of timing between when federal funds were received, or what specifically was the issue that occurred last year for our committee, and what specifically has been done to make sure that issue doesn't come up this year?
We have had more federal funding as a result of the pandemic than I've personally never seen this much money in my life. And as a result, we've had to, request additional budget authority, go back, adjusting the contracts and the awards to fit within the budget authority, and then request additional budget authority. So and that's what you're seeing with also with LAHEAP. We have more revenue than what we have a budget authority for.
And so is it from your perspective, it's just an issue of the permission the state gives you to spend money, regardless of where that money came from? Is that what you're indicating?
I think that with regard to the federal dollars, that as we get that money and we're made aware of that, that we need to ask for the ability to fund it so that we don't revert those federal dollars, and we ensure that citizens are getting services.
Okay. And approximately how many years under BEAD will y'all be working with spending that federal money?
So BEAD right now, it's a 5-year plan. So at this point, it's 5 years.
Thank you. Other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Next up on my list, I believe we have Tim Smith, Deputy State Quartermaster from the Department of Military Affairs. Thank you very much, sir. You Chairman. Are recognized to give your presentation.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman and members of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Infrastructure and Tourism. On behalf of the Adjutant General, we want to take a moment to thank Governor DeSantis and the Florida Legislature for your continued support to the Department of Military Affairs. Your advocacy continues to enable us to increase our force readiness and successfully protect the lives and properties of our citizens. Over the past year, your commitment to provide resources has aided the Florida National Guard to respond swiftly to Hurricane Idalia with over 5,000 Florida National Guard and State Guardsmen, providing life saving capabilities and commodities to the most impacted counties of our state. Provide 300 to 400 Guardsmen to assist the Florida Department of Corrections. Conduct aerial surveillance of the southern portion of our maritime borders to prevent illegal migration. Support the securing of our southern border and Operation Lone Star with over 700 members of the Florida National Guard. And finally, we continue to deploy ready forces throughout the nation and overseas in support of our federal mission. We currently have over 350 soldiers and airmen supporting 5 combatant commands and another 170 scheduled for deployment later this year. These are just a few of our accomplishments that this body has empowered, and we are thankful for your enduring support. As depicted in this overview, the DMA 2425 legislative budget request seeks a total of $409.3 million, which covers Florida National and State Guard general revenue, Camp Lanning Joint Training Center Trust Fund, and our federal grant trust fund line items. We will now review a summary of our current budget requests, beginning with the Florida National Guard general revenue priorities totaling $351 million. Number one, salary restructure. DMA salary restructure plan proposes additional rate to support competitive pay in line with state average. The agency has a twofold issue, retention and recruiting of basic entry-level employees and the equitable rate wage compensation across state agencies in Northeast Florida. DMA is one of the lowest paid state agencies, and this combined with the higher than average cost of living in Northeast Florida has led to an average of 70 vacancies within the agency over the last couple years. This restructure plan will enable DMA to attract and retain the best qualified staff with the experience and skills required to support the essential functions of the agency. Number two, the Joint Enlisted Enhancement Program. DMA requests recurring Joint Enlistment Enhancement Program funding support to motivate soldiers, airmen, and retirees of the Florida National Guard to bolster recruitment and retention efforts, increasing the force structure and strength of the Florida National Guard by allowing us to keep pace with Florida's growing population. Since 1986, Florida National Guard has shrunk as Florida's population has boomed. Although Florida is the third most populous state, Florida National Guard is ranked last in the nation in terms of number of guardsmen to citizens. Florida National Guard must grow to continue to support our citizens as they face the impacts of more frequent natural and man-made disasters. The JEEP program will encourage recruiting and retention to help meet current recruiting goals. Number three, Armory maintenance and repair. DMA requests funding to support routine maintenance and repair activities to optimize the life of facilities and their components. Since DMA does not have a recurring maintenance and repair budget, the DMA requests funding to maintain Florida National Guard armories and readiness centers. Current maintenance and repair projects include fire alarm system upgrades, roof replacements, motor vehicle parking lot resurfacing, HVAC upgrades, and emergency repairs. Number four, Camp Landing construction will be covered on the next slide. Number five, new construction and design. DMA requests construction and design funding for one new readiness center at Homestead Air Reserve Base, as well as funding for six facility design projects, allowing us to compete for federal congressional construction funding. DMA is focusing its strategic objectives around increasing force structure to meet the rapid growth of Florida's population and moving force structure to the South Florida area where some Florida attractive recruiting demographics are located. The new construction projects would provide the Florida Army National Guard with facilities to enhance our readiness capabilities while also providing the ability to continue to pursue growing the size of the Florida National Guard, which is a top priority of the Adjutant General of Florida to better support the citizens of Florida. Florida is currently over 1,400,000 square feet short in authorized readiness center space. Number six, Revitalization and Modernization Program, or REVAMP. DMA requests funds to provide for a renovation and remodeling initiative to meet safety standards and building code compliance. DMA has 63 readiness centers or armory sites containing a total of 1.5 million square feet. Renovations and upgrades are required to sustain these aging facilities. Work will include, but not limited to, design and upgrade projects to meet American with Disabilities Act compliances, life safety requirements, replace and or repair failed and failing components due to deferred maintenance, and upgraded energy efficient systems components within the existing facilities. Number seven, Homestead Air Reserve Base site work. The DMA is requesting support to fund a structural assessment, demolition of structures not suitable for use, and land clearing. DMA has a current lease with the option to buy with Miami-Dade County for approximately 70 acres previously owned by the Department of the Air Force and transferred to Miami-Dade County through the Base Realignment Enclosure, or BRAC. This property has received minimal maintenance since the transfer to the county. To bring the land to good working order, DMA is requesting funding in support of multiple initiatives for site improvement in preparation for new construction. Number eight, property acquisition. DMA is requesting state support to acquire buildable land to construct new readiness centers in the future to consolidate existing aging readiness centers and or expand current facilities in Polk, Hillsborough, and St. Johns County. The current facility average age is 61 years old and can't support the necessary expansion required for force structure located at each location. These projects support the Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan and provides for more ideal locations for units to operate within the local communities. State Active Duty Readiness Initiative. DMA requests dual-use vehicle and equipment repair parts to be utilized during National Guard civil support operations in response to an emergency event. Currently, the Florida National Guard is not funded to complete immediate repair of equipment used in emergency response missions without significant supply chain delays based on federal priorities, which can delay repairs 30, 90, or even greater than 120 days. Due to the federal supply chain's prioritization towards federal wartime missions, the current equipment capabilities could be degraded or unable to be sustained for a durational response period, such as large hurricane or widespread fires. DMA would purchase repair parts to provide rapid response and employment of the Florida National Guard during emergency activations. Number 10, National Guard Readiness Center lease. DMA requests funding for continued leases of Bartow, Homestead, and Panama City facilities. Number 11, fiscal tracking system. DMA requests funding for software upgrade to the legacy fiscal tracking system to maintain financial reporting to assess financial status. In general, finance reporting will provide information on the department's general revenue and cooperative agreement and grant expenses. The FTS system is more than 20 years old, and modernizing the software would greatly benefit overall operation of the DMA finance and accounting section. Number 12, Armory Operations Account. Since 2010, the number of Armory locations has increased to 63 facilities from 54. During that time frame, the annual appropriation for Armory operations and maintenance support had remained unchanged at $4.1 million per budget period. Until last year, in which DMA received $1.6 million in additional recurring general revenue, which we were very grateful for, and $800,000 in non-recurring general revenue, the DMA requests the $800,000 to support current Armory operations and increased inflation and utility costs. Number 13, information technology. DMA requests funding for cloud hosting, desktop automation life cycles, and server backup solution upgrades. This also supports the desktop automation, which resides on the Florida Army National Guard portion of the Department of Defense Information Network, or DODIN. And as a tenant organization of the DODIN, DMA is required to meet all cybersecurity compliance measures and directives as it relates to user hardware, software, and network solutions. Number 14, acquisition of motor vehicles. The Florida National Guard and State Guard request increased funding for acquisition and replacement of motor vehicles, specifically requiring increase due to rise in cost of motor vehicles. State active duty workers comp, DMA number 15, DMA requests funding to support annual division of risk management requirements. And number 16, military offset, the DMA requests rate increase for the career service Florida National Guard full-time state military personnel whose salaries are based on Department of Defense military pay tables for their military pay grade and years in service as established by state statute. Regarding Camp Blanding and federal grant trust funds, which require appropriation only, DMA requests to fund non-supported building upgrades as well as equipment and vehicle replacement for both Camp Blanding and the Florida Youth Challenge Academy. Camp Blanding new construction. DMA requests funding for Camp Blanding new construction through a prioritized multi-year phasing plan. The current phase two, year two of four, request will allow for Camp Blanding to retain its Garrison Training Center level two classification through modernization and the replacement of post-installation facilities that are past their service life cycles. Camp Blanding is classified as a level two Garrison Training Center, or GTC, and defined as a premier training center capable of supporting brigade training at echelon strength, such as our own 53rd Infantry Brigade Combat Team, as well as facilitating platoon-level range live fire capability. Garrison classification levels are established to define core operational capabilities and resources of a GTC. Camp Blanding currently operates with two major deficiencies for GTC level two classification, thereby requiring post-expansion and modernization for units to achieve their mission essential task gates and mobilization thresholds. Two major deficiencies are bed spaces and maneuver live fire ranges. Camp Blanding Level 2 overall shortcomings include a deficiency of over 1,200 beds to meet the requirement of 4,560 beds for transient billeting and lodging criteria. Also required are ranges to support mounted and dismounted platoon level range live fire to include modernization to many existing ranges to meet standardization design requirements. Additionally, the post requires renovation of existing support infrastructures to meet mission command readiness goals. The summary of phase two projects are as follows. Number one, the multipurpose machine gun range, which is used to train and test soldiers on the skills necessary to zero, detect, identify, engage, and defeat stationary and armored targets in a tactical array. The range supports light and heavy machine gun fire and vehicle-mounted and ground-based configurations. Live fire range upgrades, number two. Includes construction of range control towers, latrine facilities, operation storage facilities, range instructional buildings, ammunition breakdown and distribution buildings, and target and placement upgrades. This upgrade modernization is spread out over 60 existing live fire ranges. Number three, battalion billeting and support complex. Includes construction of a battalion billeting area for approximately 740 personnel, consisting of four enlisted barracks, one officer barracks, one battalion headquarters, one company operations facility, one dining facility, and this includes all parking utility infrastructure to support the facilities. Number four, logistics warehouse renovation expansion. This includes a logistics hub for all garrison training, mobilization, and emergency response operations. The construction consists of 10,000 square foot warehouse with loading docks, drive-in freezer storage, administrative areas, a weapons vault, and all parking, fencing, and utility infrastructure to support the facility. This facility will also be co-located with the logistics supply railhead. Number five, Army Combat Fitness Test and Running Track. This includes upgrades to physical fitness training grounds to meet current military standards. Number six, additional classrooms. This includes the construction of 17,500 square feet of classroom facilities, comprised of five 3,500 square foot classrooms. The construction includes centralized latrines and support areas. Number seven, the vehicle wash rack. Currently is over 50 years old and has limited throughput, which prevents proper maintenance in vehicles and requires upgrade and expansion. Number eight, installation support areas. Include the construction of three battalion-sized marshalling areas, approximately 100,000 square feet each, including fencing and vehicle maintenance shelters. Number nine, railroad repairs. Will include portions of track belonging to Camp Landing rail spur that services only Camp Landing. Camp Landing is also responsible for maintenance and repairs of all seven rail crossings that operate outside the installation's borders. Number 10, Mission Training Complex, or MTC, for brigade warfighter exercises and will provide for the ability to have capabilities at the installation and reduce unit training costs of the 12,000 soldiers and airmen that will no longer be required to travel out of state to receive equivalent training. An MTC enables leadership training program rotations prior to combat training center attendance, which is the federal mandate. This requirement is currently being fulfilled by sending Florida Guardsmen out of state to other military installations to the approximate cost of $2.3 million for each event. These facilities will also serve as a host for a variety of training events when not designated for warfighter exercises, allowing for monies to be returned to the state. The MTC would also provide an alternate emergency operations center for the EOG and Department of Emergency Management and or continuity of government site for state agencies. Number 11, additional collective live fire training ranges are required to perform vehicle-mounted gunnery of heavy machine guns in accordance with the federal requirements for multiple Florida National Guard units located throughout the state. This requirement is currently being fulfilled by units having to travel out of state, federal and other states' National Guard installations at a significant transportation cost. Camp Landing requires collective live fire ranges to meet level 2 installation requirements. And finally, the annual construction cost increase is due to inflation and overall construction cost increase in demand throughout Florida. Chairman, committee members, this concludes my portion of the brief. And pending any questions, I will be followed by the Florida State Guard representative, Mr. Jay Arnold.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions? Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim, thank you very much, first off, for the presentation. And when you look at the salary restructure, so you have 70 vacancies right now. What's that doing to our current soldiers right now? Is that creating a hardship? I mean, is that creating more hours on them, more work on them? Like, how's it affecting us today, right?
I think Chairman.
You're recognized.
I think it affects the soldiers in a way of just us and our sections, high demand of just having qualified individuals to support all facets of operations throughout the organization. From making sure they get paid on time to making sure facilities are to standard and multiple other aspects, sir.
Hey, Bob, Representative Burfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have some questions around Camp Landing. I recall correctly, last year you had come forward with about a $455 million request for over the 4 years dealing with the construction. And it looks like the legislature had provided you approximately $100 to $102 million last year. And now we're receiving an additional request, but it looks like that's a total cost of about $595 million for the same projects. So that's about a 30 to 31% increase. And I was just curious what was driving that increase, number one.
You recognize?
Yes, ma'am. From my understanding, it's a better understanding of the actual projects themselves as they work with other federal designs and the capability requirements of those plans. And of course, inflation cost was, you know, was built into the original and increased cost for demand. That's my understanding, ma'am, is that there were just more, not necessarily more upgrades, but just more of a better understanding from our construction and facility maintenance offices on how to go about constructing these new facilities and ranges.
Follow up. The other thing I noticed was number 2 and number 11 on your list, that they both deal with the firing ranges. And I know you had mentioned that the one is required for level 2, that they're traveling out of state. So is there a benefit or an ROI that we can recapture associated with that, since we're having to travel out of state? I'm assuming there's others who are traveling out of state. Is there an additional benefit there in constructing those? It's on slide 4. So it's number 2, the live fire range upgrades, and then number 11 on that list. I know number 2 you mentioned was tied to machine gun fire and the construction and upgrade of over 60 ranges. And then number 11, you had mentioned the vehicle mounted firing there, but that one is required for the level 2 classification.
Yes, ma'am.
You recognize.
And with number 2, that's really upgrading all of our current ranges right now. They've been requiring upgrades for multiple years now, which is advancements in weaponry and surface danger zone impacts. And then with number 11, if I understood your question correctly, was what's our benefit coming back to the state by keeping our organizations here?
Mr. Chairman, if I may. So with number 2, you had mentioned there was out-of-state travel that was specifically tied to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that's the benefit we're looking at capturing there, is that we wouldn't have to send individuals out of state. So that's part 1. But part 2 of that is there also an added benefit where if we're having to travel out of state, or our people are, then are there other states that may be traveling to here that we could recapture an ROI associated with?
Yes, ma'am. I believe so. I believe there are, by doing this, we would be more of a premier training site and would draw additional states to our location to perform their metal task in preparation for contingency operations.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Mr. Smith, I know there was a discussion last year on your, you know, capital outlay projects. Was there any discussion in, as like when you were adjusting the costs for these projects, any discussion about reorganizing them, maybe prioritizing a few and front-ending some funding for a few of the investments, kind of similar to what we did in the firing range investment last year?
Is it pertaining just to Camp Landing or over
the $350 million discussion we had last year about capital outlay and improvements to facilities? Over the course of all of those projects, was there any discussion about reprioritizing them to like take advantage of some type of cost savings and finishing some projects before beginning others?
Yeah, I believe they have done the analysis on which ones they phased by throughout the years, sir. But I'm not, I'd have to go back and ask for additional detail on their analysis. But I do believe Camp Landing's construction facility office has gone through and tried to prioritize them and taking those considerations into play.
Understood. See no further questions. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members of the Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee. My name is Jay Arnold, and I'm honored to serve as the Chief of Staff of the Florida State Guard. This year, with the help of the legislature, the State Guard remained poised and ready to respond to emergencies across the state. We saw this firsthand just last month, where the Florida State Guard activated over 75% of its force and deployed for the first time in over 75 years in response to Hurricane Idalia. Working closely with both state and local partners, as well as with private nonprofit organizations, our volunteers succeeded in providing rapid assistance across multiple jurisdictions to support some of the most heavily impacted areas. Our soldiers worked in tandem with some of the most with DEM to provide initial storm damage assessments in several coastal and inland communities. We prepared and delivered over 3,000 hot meals to the citizens of Horseshoe Beach and Madison, while distributing thousands of cases of water, tarps, and MREs to households in Live Oak. We conducted debris cleanup and removal alongside our local partners to heavily impacted communities in Hamilton County and in Perry, while also assisting in the delivery of supplies from Walmart and Publix to Yankeetown and Mayo. The Florida State Guard's Maritime Response Unit worked closely with its partners in the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission to conduct derelict vessel assessment and waterway debris removal in the state's coastal impacted communities. And the State Guard's Logistical Response Task Force worked alongside its partners in the Florida National Guard to assist in inventory and distribution of supplies across the state. The Florida State Guard's extensive state and local partnerships have been made possible through the continued support of the Florida Legislature, and we look forward to continuing to work together to meet that mission. The State Guard's 2023 legislative budget request for fiscal year 2024-2025 totals to $54.7 million in general revenue, a reduction of $55 million appropriated in current year. This budget supports the State Guard's capability and mission to rapidly mobilize and respond to natural and man-made disasters throughout the state, and allows its volunteers to have the proper training and equipment necessary to accomplish that mission. The Florida State Guard's legislative budget request includes $5.5 million for full-time positions within the State Guard staff. These positions consist of recruitment and logistics staff support the legislature's goal of reaching 1,500 volunteers while also remaining capable to rapidly deploy personnel and equipment across the state. The LBR also includes 18 positions to support the legislature's aviation operations budget appropriated in current year. The Florida State Guard's legislative budget request includes $19.9 million in training and recruitment resources. This issue includes funding for volunteer member stipends, travel reimbursement, volunteer background checks, training resources for boot camp and drill weekends, aviation and maritime training resources, and state active duty funding for support from our partners in the Florida National Guard. The State Guard's legislative budget request includes $8.6 million in additional support equipment. This includes funding for computers and communication equipment for volunteers during activation. This includes personal protective equipment, firearms for members of the specialized unit to augment National Guard and law enforcement agencies, and hurricane response and recovery equipment, including utility task vehicles for rapid supply and staging distributions. The State Guard's LBR includes $3.9 million for the acquisition of motor vehicles. This issue includes funding for towing vehicles, soldier transport vans and buses for rapid mobilization and response, as well as mobile command units for dispersed and concurrent activated response operations. The State Guard's LBR includes $1.9 million for the acquisition of maritime equipment to support maritime disaster and response recovery efforts. This includes funding for additional vessels, boating safety training, towing vehicles, and maintenance in further support of maritime response missions similar to those performed during Hurricane Idalia. The Florida State Guard's LBR includes $2.2 million to support the unit's aviation operations for aircraft appropriated by the legislature in current year. This issue includes funding for crew training, fuel, facility leases, and aviation equipment to support anticipated mission sets. The Florida State Guard's LBR includes $2.5 million in activation funding for its volunteers. This issue provides for stipends and travel expenses for volunteer activations outside of normal training operations. This funding allows the State Guard to respond to events by augmenting state response agencies outside of the state declared emergency, as well as provides funding for volunteers to attend emergency management planning events and additional training that would enhance their ability to assist state response efforts during disasters. The State Guard's LBR includes $10 million for its Camp Landing facilities build-out plan. This issue includes funding for a warehouse facility and a disaster response operations center on Camp Landing to facilitate command and control integration with the National Guard and adjacent response agencies. The Florida State Guard prides itself in its unique ability to rapidly mobilize and deploy in response to disasters across the state. The division's response during Hurricane Idalia was a proof of concept of the multitude of mission sets the State Guard is able to accomplish and highlights the need for capable and mobile force to assist Floridians in a time of need. The Florida State Guard appreciates the legislature's support and looks forward to working with you to ensure the State Guard continues to meet the needs of all Floridians. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here, and I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions? Representative Burfield.
Thank you. Sir, you're saying you're requesting 39 new FTEs. I was curious because in this past year, in 2023, we had allocated, I believe it was an additional 11 FTEs. At the moment, I think you've only got three of those positions that are filled. And so my question goes to, you're asking for an additional 39, and what's the justification, but more importantly, what kind of plan do you have in which to fill those positions?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. So we currently have five of those positions filled of those 11. We anticipate four more being filled within the coming weeks. So we're working diligently to make sure that we have the appropriate staff provided by the legislature to meet the intent and the needs of the State Guard volunteers. The additional 39 positions also includes recurring funding for those 11. So those 11 are included in that 39. And those additional positions include both training and recruitment staff to mobilize and rapidly deploy throughout the state. And these staff will be able to provide the resources and the manpower needed to move equipment and staging and preparation operations before, say, a hurricane impact. In addition to that, that includes bringing our air operations in-house. So that will allow us to provide for multiple pilots for both fixed and rotary wing aircrafts, as well as safety and flight compliance officers, maintenance officers, and the staff structure that's needed to support that aircraft division.
Members, any other questions? Representative Harris.
Thank you, Chair. I had a question about the training and recruitment resources, the almost $20 million that's going to go to that. What kind of training and what kind of recruitment are you all looking to do?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that question. So that training and recruitment resources budget includes a multitude of different types of training events. So right now, our volunteers train very similar to the way the National Guard or to the way a military reserve unit trains. So drill weekends throughout the year periodically, an annual training event that lasts anywhere from 7 to 14 days. And then that budget also includes additional resources for boot camps to meet that 1,500 volunteer goal. So all of that's wrapped up within those training and recruitment resources. In terms of the types of training that they do, they conduct medical training, search and rescue training, maritime response types of mission sets, and various others, including logistical and supply distribution of points of distribution supply training, as well as many others, to name a few.
Members, any other questions? I just had one on the request for the FCO, the $10 million for the FCO. Can you just tell me where that is currently located or anticipated to be located, and what efforts are being done not to duplicate services with the National Guard, if possible?
Certainly. Thank you, Chair. So that those buildings will be located on Camp Landing. And right now we've seen, especially with the budget appropriated in current year, we have had lots of equipment come in. We plan on having more equipment come in. So there's a real need right now to stage that equipment, to store it, inventory it correctly, in the similar way that the National Guard stores their equipment. Right now we're leasing facilities on Camp Landing to currently house all of that equipment. And we're running out of space very quickly. So the warehouse facility will be on Camp Landing, and that'll be a critical component of ours to be able to house not only the vehicles, but also the support supplies needed to assist in disaster response and recovery. In addition to that, we're asking for funding for an operations center aboard Camp Landing. That will house the majority of our training staff that we currently have on Camp Landing right now, who are working out of a leased warehouse space. And in addition to that, that'll support some of the FTE that we're requesting for in next year's LBR. But the main portion of that funding will go towards providing a classroom as well as an operations center so that our volunteers can operate in a similar capacity to the way the National Guard does out of the Joint Operations Center over near St. Augustine.
Thank you very much. Just one last follow-up. I hope they're giving you a good deal on that lease. If they're not, let me know. But other than that, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. The National Guard have been incredible partners to, and have been very good to us thus far.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Next up, we have Dave Kerner, Department of Highway Safety, Motor Vehicles.
Good afternoon, Chairman Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, Ranking Member Silvers, members of the subcommittee. My name is Dave Kerner, Executive Director of the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. It is an honor to be here on behalf of my bosses, Governor DeSantis, and the Florida Cabinet to present to you our fiscal year 24-25 legislative budget request. I have some brief introductions to do, if I may, Mr. Chair. We have with us Colonel Howes of the Florida Highway Patrol. He was appointed recently back in April. We have some senior staff from the department. We have our Chief of Staff, Jennifer Langston, Deputy Executive Director, Robert Kynock. We also have, I'd like to make mention, he's not here with us, but certainly in support, which is Trooper Bill Smith of the Florida Highway Patrol, who is the president of the Florida Highway Patrol PBA chapter. I highlight that relationship because as the Executive Director, this chapter of Highway Safety and the Highway Patrol will be in conjunction and working directly with our union partners to accomplish the same goals that we all have collectively, which is public safety and serving the public. I also have two special introductions, Mr. Chair. You've had the opportunity to meet Lieutenant Dolan and Trooper Turner. If I could get you two to stand up and give a wave. These troopers are with us today. We had a meeting with Speaker Designate Perez. Also, as I mentioned earlier, Chair Andrade had a chance to meet them, and we thought it would be of value to them to see how the lawmaking and budget process unfolds. You can be seated, gentlemen, and I'll just tell you quickly, both of these troopers have been involved in recent uses of force involving a pursuit, involving gunfire, and taking a bad person's life. They never want to take someone's life, but as part of their duties, they're forced to do that, and these two gentlemen have recently been involved in those. They've been sharing those stories with members of the legislature. Trooper Turner, I was appointed in January. In February of this year, he was involved in a pursuit of an armed robber, which resulted in a pit maneuver to incapacitate the vehicle. And as part of that, Trooper Turner was shot in his abdomen. He's recovered fully. I'd encourage all of you to get to know them better and speak to them if there's time permitting after this committee hearing. But we appreciate your service, gentlemen, and thank you for what you do. He has fully recovered. He's back on the road, which is in typical trooper fashion. And let me give you a little bit of overview about the LBR itself. Right now, the base budget of the department as a whole is, $578,600,000. Our request is $65 million above that, of which $39.5 million is non-recurring and $24.5 million is recurring. Zero of it is from general revenue, due to the fact that we're funded by the Highway Safety Trust Fund. So the LBR that's been submitted has been submitted, and what we have determined to be its most critical order and need, and to be candid with the chair and to the whole committee, item number one is intertwined with another issue that is not listed on the LBR, which is really a pay issue and a rate issue that the department finds itself in because of actions that have taken place previously in the last fiscal year. But I'll speak specifically to what is on the LBR, and that is $13.9 million for trooper positions. Just by way of a brief history, the footprint of the Florida Highway Patrol has actually decreased since 2012, where it was at 1,989 troopers. That authorized strength has been reduced over time, certainly not by this legislature, but in the last decade by seven positions. In that time span, the amount of visitors to the state of Florida, just for context, in 2012, there were 19 million residents. In 2023, there are 22 million residents. In 2012, there were 89 million visitors to the great state of Florida. In 2023, there are 137 million visitors to the state of Florida. And so you can see a massive increase, which has resulted in a massive increase in workload on our state troopers and component personnel to include dispatchers and all that support staff that support our brave men and women in uniform. Obviously, from our perspective, 50 troopers is not the number that needs to be funded at some point to get the agency up to full strength to be as effective as it can be. But that is a number that we think that we could effectively train in 1 year above and beyond what we're already doing now to maintain our current rate of employment as a trooper. And I say this in the backdrop of three operations that are going on that you've heard about already today from our partners in the National Guard and the State Guard. The first one is Operation Vigilant Sentry, which is down in the Keys, which is a proactive effort by the Florida Highway Patrol and our partners in terms of preventing illegal immigration into South Florida through other countries in the Caribbean area of the world. The second one is Operation Lone Star. We've had 101 troopers deployed since, I believe it's April of this year, on the Texas border. With our border agencies like the National Guard, we've had over 15,000 individual nights by our troopers away from their family over there since the operation started, and they continue to do amazing work. And that third operation is the most recent one, which is Operation Faithful Service. As we sit here today, there are about 100 troopers deployed in South Florida and throughout the state of Florida at religious institutions and schools in light of the attack by Hamas on our ally and friend, the country and state of Israel, to ensure that our religious schools stay open, that those of faith can practice their faith without fear of reprisal or attack. And we commend them for their work. The next three issues are pretty straightforward with regard to public safety. The acquisition of motor vehicles, $3.4 million, increase above the recurring fund of $10 million. You can imagine in the span of time since 2012, for example, the cost of a Charger, a Dodge Charger, which is the principal patrol vehicle for state troopers, has gone up almost 100%. So every year our buying power has decreased. And if you evaluate that over the last decade, you can see how many of our vehicles are at 140,000 miles, whereas DMS recommends that pursuit vehicles be rotated out at 80,000 miles. In fact, I asked right before we got here how many miles Trooper Turner had when he was in that pursuit and he was shot. He had 140,000 miles, and that is an officer safety issue. And so this is not an issue that will be fixed overnight. We have a large fleet, but we must. It's critical to officer safety and effectiveness that we procure cars in larger quantities so that we can rotate and replace them in a more meaningful interval. The second issue is unmanned aerial vehicles, which we call drones. As we all know, they have increasing capabilities both in combat situations and law enforcement situations, but this is a very unique use of drones. We've had a renowned drone unit in the Highway Patrol for some time, but this allocation would go specifically to our traffic homicide investigators. We investigate as an agency, and picture, there's hundreds of law enforcement agencies in the state. The Florida Highway Patrol investigates over 50% of every traffic homicide in the state on behalf of police departments, on behalf of sheriff's offices. And to do that more efficiently and effectively, this is a pilot program to where our traffic homicide investigators could utilize drones, map the scene very quickly, and then open that road back up for commerce, right? We all know the devastation of a fatality in and of itself is horrific, but there are collateral effects to the flow of commerce and the ability to travel on our roadways. If a trooper had an ability, instead of shutting that road down for 2 or 3 hours, but to map that scene in a matter of minutes to open up the roadway, what effect that would have on our ability to do commerce and travel, our visitors, people trying to get home and to work. It's a impactful pilot project that we have. And those would fund, and it's pilot in the sense that it's not a drone pilot, but they are pilots. It's pilot in the sense that we would do it in Troops C and D, which is Tampa and Orlando, which are the areas of the state that we need more assistance in terms of getting roadways open and the sheer amount of traffic fatalities that occur there. Optic sights for handguns, that's a technology that's emerged that's very effective for law enforcement officers, really the industry standard at this point. The two gentlemen behind me collectively have been involved in three separate gunfights. They were capable of incapacitating the threat without that optic sight, but I can tell you that in times of stress, they can tell you better than I can. Having that optic sight on your weapon is of immense value, not just for the safety of the trooper or the officer, but really the general public that may be bystanders and what have you. And so we would look to equip all of our troopers with optic sights on their handguns. On the motor vehicle side of the department, motorist modernization, we've heard MOMO for a long time. We've made strides in phase one. This is phase two, which pertains specifically to the motor vehicle tag title side of the house. This would be the last year of phase two. We're trying to achieve a system integration where it's much more efficient and much more effective using getting away from legacy systems. We've heard that term used pretty often in this hearing because a lot of state government has relied on legacy systems. And so this would be the final phase of MOMO 2, and we're excited about finishing that process, hopefully. Replacement and acquisition of Florida licensing on wheels vehicles. You've seen these out in the public. We've utilized them both through your wisdom and direction at correctional facilities. Most recently, I received a picture of Governor DeSantis standing in front of a Flowmobile two nights ago as he welcomed American citizens and nationals from Israel. And so what a relief it would be for them not to just arrive back on American soil through the efforts of our governor and the state government, but also be able to access very important needs from the state government through our Flowmobile. So we would look to replace two of our older vehicles and then expand our capacity to serve the public by adding to credentialing and equipment and maintenance, $5.5 million funding to update all driver's license equipment throughout the state in preparation of the phase two MOMO release. Excess vehicle fuel and vehicle repair costs. We talked about the acquisition of motor vehicles already. We also have experience because our fleet is older and the repair costs have skyrocketed, really, that we need assistance repairing those vehicles. There was a time in the history of the Florida Highway Patrol, fortunately it's long gone, but there was times where we'd have to park cars and not put them on patrol, both because of fuel costs and just not an inability to repair them. And so we would look for support in making sure that our vehicles that we do have in our current fleet remain on the road, operational, and safe for the troopers' use. Increased funding for additional license plates. This funds increase in force replacements due to the end of the 10-year cycle. So there's sort of an ebb and flow of as these force replacements occur. To meet that need, we would need $1.4 million, or we would not have the ability or authority to purchase plates for Floridians and new residents to the state. USIS save fee for immigration processing and credentialing staff. Just by way of example, there's been a lot of discussion about the border. There's been a lot of discussion about immigration. We've spent time collectively on the southern border. Politics aside, there is a huge issue there. And as people cross that border, if they check in with Border Patrol or they're caught by Border Patrol and issued the I-385, they are entitled and allowed to obtain a driver's license in the state of Florida or anywhere in the United States. As part of that process, they must come to a tax collector's office or one of our offices in Miami-Dade and Broward, and we are required to do an immigration status check to make sure that they're here lawfully with those documents, and that costs money, and that the amount of money that we've spent has skyrocketed both because of the increase in immigration to the state of Florida, but on the out years, the cost to run each person will go up by a factor of three. I think it's a dollar now, and by 2027, it's going to be $3. And so this looks to fill that gap so that we can do our statutory duty of determining someone's legal presence and status in the United States before we issue them a valid government Florida ID or driver's license. So that's a high-level overview of our LBR. There are other issues on it, but in the interest of time, we made sure to compress it to the most compelling needs. Of course, I am here on behalf of the department, and it's 3,700 members to answer any questions or concerns that you may have.
Thank you very much, Director. Members, are there any questions? Representative Lopez, you're first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Kerner. I have a question, but also a commendation. I commend your staff for having been so responsive during a time in Miami-Dade, as you and I have spoken about, where people have tried to kind of steal all of the appointments in our very limited resources for getting driver's license and identification cards, and then trying to sell them to people. I really commend your investigative, efforts to try to stop that, but also having been so helpful in making sure that those people that really needed them to either travel abroad were able to get those appointments. So I want to thank you for that, you and your staff. I also want to tell you that I'd be in favor of adding more flow of vehicles, as you know, especially in the high-density urban areas. Those flow efforts have been super helpful because we've been able to call together a neighborhood, for instance, and say, if you need any assistance from, obviously the department, they're right here. And people have really responded very positively to your flow because it's hard to get around. Obviously, transportation is a huge issue. So I wanted to tell you that, I see that you want to replace two and add two. I would say add more because it has become very... it's a very positive impact on the constituency, especially in the urban areas. And lastly, I want to commend the Florida Highway Patrol. I happen to have been present at a Shabbat dinner last Friday in my district in a very urban area. And there was a Florida Highway Patrolman there who was incredibly responsive. We'd had an issue at that shul on the Saturday morning when the issues began in Israel. So we'd already had someone try to attack the shul. And knowing that Florida Highway Patrol was there in association with the City of Miami police officers gave the 200 people who went to Shabbat dinner there in service great comfort. And I had a conversation with that Florida Highway Patrolman who understood House Bill 269 and said that, the governor had been very, very responsive to ensure that all of you, Florida Highway Patrolmen, knew that and that you would get that message down to the very bottom of all of the law enforcement officers. And as a result, that person will be charged under that particular hate crime. So I know that it's been a tough time, but you all have made a real big difference, at least in my district. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Market, did you have a question? Representative Placencia, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I do have a question, though. What is the current vacancy rate for sworn FHP? And also, what is the average number of days those positions have been vacant?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that question. As it stands right now, the vacancy rate is about 7.8%, but to be totally candid, the vacancy rate has been much higher traditionally and historically for this agency, as we suffered from being one of the lowest paid highway patrols in the nation and being understaffed. And because of the wisdom of the legislature and the support of the governor, we have seen a rise in salaries. We certainly, I don't believe personally, are there yet, but that has helped fill that gap. So as we sit here right now, we're about 7%. We can't afford to hire any more troopers because of some troubles that we're in with our budget and rate, to be totally candid with you. So allowing 50 more troopers would give us that ability to hire.
Any follow-up?
Thank you. Also, the amount requested for overtime appears to be almost half of what's being requested for salaries and for benefits. Why is the overtime so high?
Mr. Chair, excellent question, Representative, and that goes to the heart of one of the structural issues of this agency, and that is understaffing. So when we're at these temples, when we're in Texas, when a trooper has to stay because there's not enough troopers to work the next shift, particularly in our urban areas where we investigate such a large component of the overall crashes that occur in the state, there's just not enough men and women in uniform to serve the needs without that overtime component. I would love to get to zero. I would love for every trooper to be able to be home with their wife or husband as much as possible. But under the current demands of this agency, a growing state, and an emerging mission of this agency, without that overtime, we can't meet the public safety needs of the public.
Representative Burfield, you're recognized.
Thank you. I know it's not a part of the presentation that you provided us, but could you tell us a little bit about the Criminal Justice Incentive Program, kind of explain what it's about and potentially the need for budget associated with it?
Yes, and I believe that's in our, Mr. Chair, if I may. I believe that's part of our larger LBR. The Criminal Justice Incentive Program is a program that has existed historically in the state to reward all law enforcement, not just highway patrol, incentives every month if they have an associate's degree. For example, when I started in 2004 as a police officer, I graduated from UF, I got $80 a month added to my salary as part of that education component. There are other portions or other ways to obtain that incentive. It's impactful. It's not going to be a life-changing amount of money. I think it's capped at $120 per month, $110 per month, but we're seeing a more educated law enforcement footprint, and so we're excited about that. But to make sure that we meet those needs and try to get every trooper that $120 a month, which means a lot to them, we would need more funding.
Very much. I did have one question, Director. You did mention there's about a 7.8% vacancy rate for sworn officers, but you are asking for 50 additional FTEs. I just want to clarify. How will that not just create a larger percentage vacancy for sworn officers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So right now we're seeing immense interest in being a state trooper. Some of that has to do with issues that we discussed that didn't happen correctly. And that's a career development plan, which we're working with leadership on to try to move forward. But we are at a negative 6.5 million rate already. That means that as an administrator and leader of this department, I can't in good faith spend the money that I don't have or that the department doesn't have. So because we're negative rate, we really don't have the ability to hire anybody. We've gone from, 400 person. I don't want to get my numbers incorrect here because clarity is very important here. But when I was appointed, we had 553 vacancies department-wide. As we sit here today, to curtail that rate deficit, we have 693 vacancies. And I've worked diligently with leadership to make sure that that doesn't affect the sworn component. But if we were allocated those funds specifically for FTEs, for troopers, we would then have the rate and budget to hire them. And we would hire them. We just brought on two more classes. You're going to see in our monthly rate report that we're required to submit to the House and the Senate that our rate deficit has grown since last month, and that's because we brought on how many troopers, Colonel? 21 more troopers, and that's to sustain the vacancy rate that we have, because we do have troopers that leave every month. So 50 more FTE, there is an assumption in there that we would have corrected our rate issues by that time during this session. That's maybe not a fair assumption, but it's an aspirational assumption.
Well, thank you. Well, so 7.8% vacancy, about how many FTEs does that represent?
So I think probably 70, if I may, Mr. Chair.
So just prior to this class, we were maintaining around 106 vacancies. Now we're down to like 120.
So about 120 vacancies.
Okay. And just for my, simple, non-intelligent way of thinking about it, those are inadequate FTEs. Those are FTEs that don't have the correct rate assigned to them. And is that a correct assumption?
A position, Mr. Chair, do you mean that there are positions or troopers in this agency that are paid more than the base rate?
Well, there's a 7.8% vacancy rate, meaning there are FTEs right now that are left unfilled.
Correct.
And my understanding is that that description is, well, our rate is wrong for those FTEs. Is that correct?
It's Mr. Chair, it's my belief that there is a huge inequity in how rate is assigned, particularly in law enforcement space. Yes, sir. We have sergeants and lieutenants that are paid a base rate, a base salary of $75,000, but are applied a rate of $52,000. So automatically you're going to see a rate deficit there. I can't overcome that as an administrator, but what I can tell you is that the current state of the patrol, typically there are more departures and resignations per month than there are new hires. And so we've had a negative, rate is becoming a confusing word here, but we've had a negative attrition rate in the agency. We've lost more than we've brought on for the last decade. In this recent year, we are starting to retain more. Our attrition rate was cut in half recently. And so what I'm projecting is that if we continue down that road, the remaining 7% is going to be filled up very quickly by future academy classes, and then it's time to look to expanding the agency. A lot of that is dependent upon the larger conversation about how we pay our troopers. Are we going to have a career development plan? Answers the questions that we don't have right at this moment, but one answer is that you know that I've worked diligently with leadership in the department and in both chambers to try to resolve. But right now, we're going to be able to fill our vacancies within, I would say, the next 4 months if we continue to bring on new troopers. We have a lot of interest in joining this esteemed agency.
You anticipate filling the vacancy, so the 7.8 will go to zero. And then you anticipate asking or hiring 50 additional law enforcement if this 50 FTEs are approved?
Mr. Chair, yes, sir. And that takes into account our need to fill resignations and retirements simultaneously. And so we believe on the current arc of this agency that we could easily fill those 50 positions. And really, it's a function of how many academy classes could we have if we had the necessary funding to continue those classes forward.
And the conclusion I'm looking for is if all of those vacancies were filled, 7.8 went to zero, additional 50 FTEs were granted, and 50 additional officers were hired, based on the current operations at the agency, would you have the money to pay all of those officers?
No, sir.
So my the crux of what I'm asking is there a way to work on fixing the rate issue that's evident and not just simply talking about FTEs on the books?
We're talking about rate in its technical term, our rate deficit, correct? Can we fix that rate deficit? The answer to that, sir, and this is contained within the report that we send every month on the 15th, is that we are fixing our rate deficit. I've held positions open in this agency, or have grown vacancies in this agency to an astronomical amount, and the operational impacts are real. And so I can do what I can. Am I going to fix, or is this department going to fix by vacancies on the civilian side? Is that going to resolve it? No, we are in a $6.5 million rate deficit at this point. But what I will say is that if we continue to work together and have that larger conversation, and there is a basic reallocation of how rate is applied to certain positions just on the sworn side, because we have a leadership structure, and right now we get $52,000 of rate for every sworn person, but we have majors and captains, and I think that is in one sense inequitable if I'm being asked to repair the rate deficit that this department got itself in on its own volition and own decisions, and I admit that. But can I fix it alone? I have two sides of the house. One is civilian, one is sworn. I've been directed to try to make it the sworn side of it held harmless. And so the answer is no, I cannot fix the rate deficit without the assistance of the legislature.
Thank you very much, Director. members, we are coming up very tight on time. I need to publicly apologize to the Division of Emergency Management and Mr. Strickland. You will be invited to our next meeting. Members, this concludes our committee agenda. Again, we plan on picking up where we left off in a few weeks when we return. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Brackett, who came late today, moves that we rise. Without objection, meeting's adjourned.